Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. Today, I'm joined here with Anna Marie Smelly, a neuroplastician, kinesiologist, and founder of Quester Therapies and the Wired for Learning Method with the number four. I'm going to ask you about that. Anna Marie has spent over 20 years helping children and adults understand and overcome the root causes behind learning, behavior, and emotional challenges. Her work looks beneath the surface, exploring things like primitive reflexes, auditory processing, nutrition, and mindset to help people truly rewire from the inside out. She recently spoke at the TES Send Show 2025 in London on her talk, Wired to Fail, which explored why so many neurodiverse children struggle in traditional systems and how we can better support them. Thanks, Anna Marie. Welcome.
Yes. Nice to talk to you.
That's a lot. So did you start out studying kinesiology and that was that your original study, or did you move into that? And then if so, what caused you to make that switch and move into that?
Firstly, I had nothing to do with any of this health stuff, first of all, when I started working. Started at the BBC in television as a television production assistant, doing live programs, and loved it. It was great. But I had four children in 2.5 years, so something had to give. Do you know, it was so strange. You have these children, you look after them, you're doing everything, and suddenly your confidence goes to nothing. I find a lot of women have this. I didn't know, I couldn't go back to work because it was just too hectic with the children. And I just lost who I was. I had no idea. I thought, what am I trained for? What can I do? My husband said, you know, what do you want to do? And I went, well, I don't know, help people, but I'm not trained. I'm not a nurse. I'm nothing. I went for a really bad time in my life and had hypnotherapy sessions, funny enough. Firstly, because I was smoking like a chimney. So stressed out. I when I was doing this hypnotherapy, for my confidence was like ground zero. And I started to thought, hang on, this is really interesting. So I thought, oh, maybe I can do this. I don't need a degree to do it. Because the job is, my age, I didn't go to university. I went straight into working at the BBC. I didn't have a degree. So, you know, a lot of things they're saying, you've got to have a degree before you do this training or that training. Well, you know, I'm not unintelligent. I can do it. But I just thought it's so sad. It sort of put blockages in.
Mm-hmm.
But the hypnotherapy was just mind-blowing. I mean, I've done that for 20-odd years now, and I still love it. It's a questioning technique. It's not sort of just getting people to think in a better way. It's actually finding, going to the root causes about why. Everyone's got a different jigsaw puzzle in their life, and it's sort of, it's a bit of this and a bit of that. And it's just basically, I argue with their subconscious, and I swear, to actually undo some of the knots that they've got formed in their minds. But I always found
that's why it's hypnotherapy instead of hypnosis, right? Because you're actually doing stuff. Yeah,
you're working with the mind. And what I found is so many people, a lot of their issues came from when they were young, and I always thought, god, wouldn't it be amazing to be able to get to them before they built up all these excess sort of troubles in their subconscious. And then funny enough, you know, as life happens, I got asked to join a clinic where I became trained as a neurodevelopmental and auditory practitioner. So I was directly dealing with children. And I have to say, when we were doing these, working on retained primitive reflexes, I didn't believe it. I thought, yeah, right, you know. Mm-hmm. Really? Do they have such an effect? And I saw the difference in these children. And, you know, it was like, oh, wow, okay, this really does help them. Because they have blockages that can cause blockages to reading, to writing. Great anxiety, mm-hmm. things like that. But I always wanted to bring more mindset stuff in. So I used to sort of just put a bit of, you know, try and talk to them in a way to help their mindset as well. And then I decided to go on my own. And I've got my own clinic. And this is when I started into kinesiology as well, because I always knew that nutrition has a part to play in how people's neurotransmitters work in their brains and how their bodies and how they feel. Again, not a nutritionist as such, but I came across an amazing nutritionist who also was a kinesiologist. And she just said, So she could do blood tests and, you know, urine tests, things like that. But she said kinesiology gave her better results. She could find out more through kinesiology.
So can you tell us what kinesiology is in case people don't know what that is?
Yes,
I'm sure I know what it is.
Took me a bit to be able to say it properly, but it's basic working on your body's own intelligence, but it's through muscle testing. It's just a little bit of pressure, and you can ask it sort of questions. I'd use different vials with different frequencies in, and the body will respond. It will sort of just go, if it's something, or depending on what you're asking it, what it's doing. It's quite hard to explain, really, but it's the body's feedback, and it's amazing. When I first learned it, I thought it was sort of this, but it's like, wow, there's so much more you can do with it. And I brought it into so many different areas now, and children love it. But you can get into their heads. You can find out what they're feeling without them telling you, which is for children, you know, I couldn't do hypnotherapy on them. They were too young.
Yeah.
But with the kinesiology, I can find out what they're feeling and be able to help correct some of these thought processes as well.
So you were led to kinesiology by this dietitian? Is that what you were saying?
I saw her do, and I saw how powerful it was for her. And I thought, oh, I want to, you know, I just thought I'd be able to use it for little bits and pieces. But when I started, then I started learning, I was like, I can do it for so much more. So I've learned lots of so many different techniques within it, which, you know, just each one. I mean, I'm a bit of like a shiny object person. I keep thinking, oh, I'll learn that now. And oh, I'll learn this. So I have to sort of rein myself in a bit. But I'm trying to try and bring in as many things as possible that can help these children and adults. I do treat adults as well. But it's just, if you can just find out what's going on underneath, what's on the foundations, you can really support them. And my main thing is I just want them to be confident, their self-esteem to be good. Those are the most important things.
That's important for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're talking about getting like to the base level, is that what you mean by like primitive reflexes, you said?
Yeah. So when we're born, only a small percent of our brain is developed. Okay. And as a baby is moving and we grow through movement, we're like a tree grows in a set way, so do we. But we grow on our neural pathways are bedded down through movement. So these are researched exercises which mimic what the child would do, a baby would do, okay? When you've got, say, a birth process like a C-section, they're not getting the stimulation that they need to kickstart these primitive reflexes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a sunroof. But also sometimes it can be, I mean, there's no definitive answer. It can be too slow a birth when there's trauma then, or too quick a birth when they're ripped out too, you know, they come out too quickly. And then again, they're not getting that stimulation. And then it could be just because they're in a neonatal unit, then they're not having that stimulation again from their environment. And so there can be all sorts of different reasons. But if they should be integrated into the central nervous system by about a year old. If they're not, they just lead to blockages. And there's one called the ATNR reflex, asymmetrical tonic and neck reflex. So if you put your head one way, the arm and leg on that side want to go as well. It's known as the fencing pose. That directly affects the ability for the eyes to cross the midline easily. And you can actually even just tell if someone's got it just by looking at their eyes and just testing, because they sort of jump or jiggle as they're going across the midline. This is why reading then, child might say that the words are jumping or they're missing sentences or they're not getting the comprehension properly, because the amount of effort that goes in to focus on the words then takes away the comprehension side, the processing.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I've had some friends who've studied somatic therapy, and they do have it sounds like there might be some crossovers. They do have some different exercises where they're like, you know, roll over, push, pull, like these kind of like very basic exercises that integrate your physicality with your nervous system. So I wonder if there might be a synergy there.
There's different ways to get to the same results. You know?
Yeah.
And there's so many different therapies out there that can help support. And I'm not saying mine is the only one. There's lots of other ways to do it. And I just think I love to pick up on other ideas from people anyway, because like, oh, that's a better one. You know? That's what I've tried to design as over the years, effective sort of exercises that have more impact on them.
Right, right. That's words of wisdom. You can get the same result with different methods.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think amazing. We sometimes we're very, people say, oh, it's just this is the only thing to do. Well, not necessarily. That person might do, you know, but again, everyone's different. It might be really good for one person, but not so good for another person. So, right. You know, you have to think that we're all unique.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah. Well, I keep saying, thank goodness we're unique. We want people. It's a bit like, you know, a child who comes in with dyslexia and I go, oh, brilliant. Your mind is fantastic. We've just got to be able to help you be able to get your reading and writing so that, you know, you can get it out to the world more.
Yeah, I think that's constant struggle with children and with adults who learn a little differently or have a little different perspective is that it's so easy to say like, this, you're doing it wrong, right? When really they're just doing it differently. And exactly. If they can manage things differently, then it doesn't make any difference, right? Different routes, same result, right?
Exactly. And it's so difficult. I have a lot of children I see who have, say, autistic. The trouble is they've got a lot of information coming in that it's an overwhelmed system. And therefore, it's very difficult for them to understand the social cues and other things because they've just got so much other stuff going on. And it's like you need to calm that system down. But a lot of parents, it's calming the parent down as well because normally when they're about 4, 5, 6, 7, that can be really tricky for the parent because that child is really pushing against trying to work itself out. And it'd be really hard work for the parent to deal with. And I just said, look, there's plenty of people, adults in the world who are autistic or ADHD, and they've done well. They might have, you know, parents might have struggled when they're younger, but they will. Please don't think this is the end. This is that as maturity comes, they will learn more about themselves and how to behave. And, you know, but when they're struggling when they're young.
Yeah. I mean, every parent wants their child to have the best experience. And I think that there's a lot of pain that comes with some kind of diagnosis, right? Because in a way you feel like that diagnosis is saying there's something horribly wrong with your child when really it's saying this is how your child works or functions or perceives things, right? And it's just whether you can adjust their world to sync up with the world that most of us experience, right?
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, with school doesn't always suit people, doesn't suit certain children, you know. And the majority of people who've got autism, they tend to have primitive reflexes there, especially the Moro reflex, which is the anxiety reflex that makes it very difficult for a child to deal with transitions. There's fear of change. They can put pressure on themselves. And there's a long, long list of different areas that this Moro can affect. But every sense is on heightened alert. So they're very, very sensory. Cool. And it's just all this information they're picking up all the time. So dealing with a school life is so difficult because it's not just the teacher. You've got the other children. You've got the sort of the intensity of the noise. And, you know, you've got to move different classrooms maybe and things like that. So it's like they've got to settle again each time.
Yeah, I remember my son talking with my son about school. And I was like, if I had to work intensely at something for 50 minutes and then go to another room and work intensely at something for 50 minutes and then go to another room, how would I get anything done? I don't understand. Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to, I mean, speaking about stress and anxiety, let's go back a little bit to your professional career. I think I remember you saying that it was too much, right? When you have you had four children and you're in kind of a high pressure production assistant. Was it a production assistant role at the BBC?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely loved it, but I had four children in 2.5 years. So and all the productions I worked on The Cenotaph, Troop in the Colour, Queen's Quiz was broadcast. they're all around the birthdays or Christmas, where it's my children's days.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can, you know, I wanted to be there for them as well.
Right, right. That makes sense. So as you're transitioning into doing this other work, you said you had like a moment where you were like, you've really had felt defined by your work as a in television, and you had to kind of like reconsider who you might be. And what do you think, like, what was the hook where you're like, oh, wait, you know, because a lot of people have shiny object syndrome. I get shiny object syndrome, right? Because just the human mind, we just love novelty. It's amazing, right? So what was the moment where you went, I'm going to help other people's kids? Was there a definitive moment you remember?
No, from the television to hypnotherapy, that was a few gaps. You know, it was quite a few years as such. And that's, you know, just lost who I was. And just felt that I'm just a mother, even though you do so much. Felt I didn't have anything to say, nothing interesting to say, apart from what my children are doing, you know. But the hypnotherapy, it was a hypnotherapy for adults first. I just love getting into people's heads and, you know, in a nice way, and helping them. I was trained up in Birmingham, UK. It was very specific about how you treat people. It's a type of hypnotherapy. It's a sort of edging on counseling type thing, because you're not just, hypnotherapy has got so many different methods. A lot of them sort of like the sweep technique, that you're re-visualizing something in a different way. And I'm like, to me, that was always like putting a plaster on it. I'm like, well, let's find out why. Let's correct the of thinking at source, so that there's less managing, that it's at a deeper level. And literally, yeah, I did that for, gosh, at least 15 years before even dealing with children direct on the primitive reflexes. That was just very new. And it was just something I hadn't even thought of and had no idea that it could cause a lot of issues for the children. So like my son has dyslexia, and if I had known about the primitive reflexes when he was young, I could have helped him, you know, because it affects your self-esteem, your confidence, things like that. Luckily, he knew well about it. But my brother had seriously dyslexic, and, you know, it really did affect him. And if I'd known that, I thought, oh, I would have got into that sooner, but didn't know about it.
I mean, hindsight, right?
Yeah.
Hindsight's 2020. I wanted to just take a minute to tell you about a new business I'm working on. It's called Red Nose Corporate, and it's a business that creates workshops to help bring cohesion and better communication in corporate teams using techniques from improv and Red Nose Clown. Not as silly as it sounds, a little bit silly. You'll be able to find it at rednosecorporate.com. Let's talk a little bit about your wired to fail talk. And you gave that recently, right?
Yes, and that was really just sort of slightly shocked to get them to understand, you know, think, hang on, what's going on here? Because it was interesting. I went to this test SEND show in London. It's all for the SEND departments and parents who have, you know, have children of difficulties. But I went around there, and, you know, all the stalls, that everything was like to manage, or to, you know, certain toys, or and manage things, but not working out, well, what's the problem underneath? Great, they help us, you know, but why aren't they getting to the source of why they might be having the difficulties? And that's why I did the talk there. And it was interesting, because I actually know, I when the test SEND show said that they had a list of people talking, I said, well, that sounds great, but isn't anybody talking about this area? I did not put myself up to do it. And then about a month or so later, out of the blue, they said, well, will you do the talk? So, yeah, I was like, okay. I don't know if it had any difference or not, because I have to say, SEND departments, people, they've got so much on their shoulders. They're having to work really, really hard.
What are SEND departments?
Special education departments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I thought, wouldn't it be brilliant if you get to children when they're about 7, 8, because it's easier to test than them, to see just a blanket approach. Let's see if they've got these primitive reflexes there or auditory stuff or things going on. Because if you treat them early enough, then they've got time for the new neural pathways to bed down. If you're doing it later, suddenly, you know, child is doing all right, and then suddenly they're overwhelmed, they're anxious. You think, well, why is my child anxious when they were before? And that's because the pressure of school has gone up and up. They'd be able to mask it. They'd be able to just about struggle through. But when the pressure's gone on, that's when they've gone into a meltdown. So this is why if they did a blanket approach of just testing them, so easy to test them, see if they're there, and then give them the specific exercises before the schoolwork gets on, then they've got time to actually bed everything down and make more difference for them. I just thought, wouldn't that be easy? But do you know, it's so hard to get them to listen to. I think they've got just too much on their shoulders anyway. Yeah. So I'm just trying to get it out to parents to say, hey, I didn't know this when my children were young. I think you should know it.
So you're saying working with pronib reflexes improves neuroplasticity, right, in the long term?
It improves learning, improves emotional control. It can improve behavior. And that's self-esteem and confidence. Yes.
I mean, who could argue with that? So this work with the primitive reflexes, you're saying that if someone is not learning disabled, that they've already integrated this kind of into their, it's part of their operating system, right? But if you are learning disabled, there might be parts of your operating system, which is, can be, you know, recalibrated with this primal reflexes.
Yes, exactly.
True, right.
Of course, I'm seeing people who've got the difficulties who come to me, but, you know, they might just have one or two things going on. But if they've got dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADHD, autism, they're bound to have these reflexes there.
Wow. So you said that you've pretty much given up on the schools. So you have your own clinic and you're working directly with parents and children?
Yes, I work directly at my clinic, and I do some free talks every so often to parents. The main thing they always come back to me saying is, why aren't we told all this? I go, okay, that's why I'm trying to get out there. Because it's not rocket science. Can really help these children. You know, earlier the better, really, I feel.
Yeah, sometimes I think we have a tendency to think that things that are more complicated are more successful, but I don't think that's necessarily always true.
No, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes if people say, well, this is a secret thing, but it's not. It makes sense. And yes, there's researched exercises, but they're not massive and they don't harm anybody. Because actually, if you just, every child did the exercises, it wouldn't harm them, but at least, you know, they'd all be covered as such to get sorted.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have do testing, or do you just have people come to you whose children have already, you know, exhibited some difficulties either in self-confidence or learning or whatever?
Well, the parents tend to contact me. I do a free phone consultation, 15, 20 minutes long, sometimes longer if I've got time. I go into finding out, I want to know about the personality of the child. I want to know what makes them tick, because that's part of it as well. Because sometimes the body will hold on to these reflexes if it's more of a stubborn personality. It will hold on to them longer. So sometimes you have to work on personality before you work on the reflexes, okay? So I look at that, but I'm looking to asking where they're having difficulties, what's going on. Some of them already have had labels given to them, but I'm just asking, well, what are you seeing? What are they struggling with or not? So I ask about all sorts of balance, reading, writing sort of things, but also I ask about their hearing or whether they've got hypersensitive hearing, if they've noticed that, if there's certain sounds that tend to be irritating to them, because this is part of the picture, the auditory side as well, because to be able to read, we have to need to hear as well to be able to, you know, get the two together. Yes, you can do Braille if you're deaf, but it's part of the process. And it can make, again, if you've got, say, hypersensitive hearing and you're in a classroom, a noisy classroom, you can hear the leaves rustling outside, the scraping of the chairs at the back, the whispers, as well, you're trying to listen into that tutor as well. It's just too much information coming in again.
Right.
You might find it hard to follow instructions because there might be distortions in their hearing profile. So it's looking, you know, ask questions about that. And I ask questions about sort of nutrition as well. And I have a lot of parents say, oh, you know, child eats really well, good nutrition. I go, well, they might be eating really well, but their body, because again, we're all different, might not be able to absorb certain vitamins or minerals as well as somebody else. So I can test to see if there's, you know, if they've got any genetic deficiency in actually being able to absorb things, because that has a part to play as well. And a lot of the children I see have, liver methylation issues, where they're not getting rid of the toxicity in the system. And if they've got the toxicity build up, that can affect behavior.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you ever work with children that are nonverbal?
I haven't done many, because the more extreme ones, I haven't, you know, on that extreme autism, haven't sort of. But it's interesting because I've started with a new method, which I'm researching, which is, seems to be having, you know, really good effects. I'm beginning to speak, but I don't want to, I'm not saying that because, you know, it's all the research mode at the moment. I'm testing it out to see if it's actually really helpful. Potentially, it's really helpful.
Right. Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, when you're saying you're talking with the parents about the child's experience and maybe like being overwhelmed by sound and stuff, you know, if, because, you know, child may not know enough of what is actually bothering them because they don't have any other frame of reference, right? So you're relying on kind of like the parent's analysis. And then when you meet the child, you do some like more discovery, right?
Yes. I mean, I do a full assessment, an audiogram, and see what's going on with the hearing, which includes a bone conduction test. I do a full neurodevelopmental assessment. And then I look at stress, I look at mindset as well, toxicity, nutrition.
And you do blood work, right? Because you said, we're talking about liver methylation.
I don't need to, because the kinesiology, the body tells you what's going on there. So I can test for something like liver methylation, beneficial bacteria, parasites, candida. I can test for all those things without blood tests or urine tests. And there's some extreme things as well, that there's something called pyrrole disorder. Again, nothing, I wouldn't have heard this before, which children can have extreme reactions, like massive anger. And it's down to basically a massive lack of zinc and vitamin B6. Something very simple can be sorted, but it makes them like a devil in many ways. They make them so hard to deal with. And something also called PANS or PANDAS, which is pediatric. God, I won't go into the whole thing. But it's what it does. It comes from having the strep virus, and a child can change overnight from being a normal sort of easygoing child to suddenly this out of control child because of this virus that's there. Now, this is something that it's relatively new, and the GPs are looking to. But I think more and more people are beginning to understand how you know, horrendous it can be. Oh gosh, I had a child in the other day, the poor parent. She just didn't know what to do. This child was just off the wall with obstinate, defiant. And, you know, and actually I tested and the strep virus was there. So I sent her off to go and see somebody who directly deals with PANS and PANDAS.
Yeah, I've never heard of PANDAS. So I don't want to say family, but family is part of it, right? What kind of case do you work with that you find you have the best or the most lasting results with?
Anybody with, you know what, I'd say the more extreme people I wouldn't deal with, because I would say they need more specialist help. Okay. I'm dealing with the children who go to school or who might be homeschooled because they can't cope with the environment. So I'm dealing with the anxiety, but it's basically dealing with anxiety, what's going underneath. And I have some ones who, how do I say, that their behavior is really difficult, but I'm working on the layers of them, if that makes sense, because mm-hmm. it takes more time. So some people, I have changes within a couple of months, 3-4 months, but mm-hmm. other ones, I'm sometimes working over a year to, because there's a lot going on.
Right. Yeah. People are complex.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if I felt I couldn't help them, I'd pass them on to somebody else who, would be in that sort of area. But, I try and do as much as I can of it. But also, funny enough, sometimes working on the parents as well, because this is part of the dynamics that are going on. So sometimes I'm dealing with the parents' emotions as well as I'm dealing with the children's ones.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at kids who are in a position with their parents, and the parents are trying to do what's best for the kid, and the kid is trying to do what they think will make the parents' life easier, and everybody is just bending and bending, and nobody knows where anybody else is,
Yeah, it's some, with some parents, every parent's different as well. Some parents are really pushy and really put the pressure on their child. And I've had to back off a bit to give that child a bit of space to be able to sort themselves out. Where some other ones are, give one extreme to the other, they're not giving that child boundaries. And then that child doesn't know where it is because it's pushing against it all the time and just can get away with more and more stuff. It's actually saying to the parent, it's good to have boundaries. They need to know, because when a child has boundaries, they feel safe.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a misconception too. I think, people want their children to take initiative and such. They're, pushing up against a parent. If they never push back, then,
I had one child, she had global developmental control, end of the day, and a delay. And she'd had all sorts of different treatments, but nothing was sticking. And she had a massive personality. I mean, she was great, she's lovely, but so stubborn, unbelievably stubborn about things. And I was talking, she said, you're a bit stubborn. And the mother went, yeah, isn't it brilliant? I'm being stubborn about when something's right and you want to keep going at something and it's working well for you. But not if something's holding you back, then that's not good for you. And so funny, I've had to get the mother to understand it as well as the child. And so before I could do any of the primitive reflex stuff with her, I had to work on her mindset to get it to loosen up and to also to believe in me as well, because she would be very much any extra assisting at school, she would be quite rude about them as well. She just was like blanking them out. And bit by bit, I could get into her and get into her and she understand that this stubbornness, we need to work in the right way, because her body is holding on to these reflexes in a stubborn way as well. So this is about loosening things up so that we can actually get the body working better and her mind working better. And yes, she can think great thoughts, do things, but let's work in the right way, not the wrong way. Difficult to describe, but the change in her was great. The way that she started to open up, and because when she first arrived, her eyes were bouncing all over the place. There's no way she could track easily, and by the end of it, they were tracking beautifully. So it's like it worked, but it took a bit of time to get there.
Yeah, stubbornness is really binding, right? That's like a stiff energy that resists change or even conversation, I would say, right?
Well, even with the hypnotherapy clients, I've had plenty of clients who have been naturally stubborn and would not change allow the change to happen. And I'm quite good at arguing with them because they answer with their fingers. It's called ideomotor response. I get better answers that way. And these fingers would argue like mad. I had to really reword things, see from different angles until they allowed to, themselves to give up on it. I was like, as soon as they did that, everything sort of opened up and expanded. But it's just showing them that they're harming themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so amazing about people that we go to somebody and we're like, I need help. Things aren't right. I need help. And then they're like, do this, but not that way. Right? We have requirements how we think help should be accomplished.
Yeah, and it's like one of the big things I've always said about with hypnotherapy is like if you feel anger towards someone or, you know, fearful, that person has power over you. You need to take the power back. So it's not by if you're resentful, if you're angry, they've got power. They don't even know about it. They're walking around minding their own business. Meanwhile, you're harming yourself because of it. You're draining your energy and stressing yourself out. So you need to, it's like cutting those ties to those emotions as well. It's not forgiving, but it's letting it go because, you know, I mean, forgiving for some reasons they have to, but it's like letting go to support yourself because otherwise you are constantly harming yourself and that's wrong.
There's a great, one of my, I know many Buddhist quotes that I really love, but there's a great Buddhist quote about being angry at someone is like sitting in the corner and drinking poison. It doesn't affect them at all, hurts you a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
No, oh, I just, one thing I'm going to show you. Sue, I have.
It's Show not and Tell. Amazing.
It's a book called Hidden Thoughts. It's about all the hypnotherapy. It's not published yet. It'll be next year, early next year. I'm just being edited probably to make sure I haven't made any mistakes. But it has stories of clients to see where the anxiety came from, to see where it went on, and some techniques and tools that I've used for myself and for clients to be able to help them. So, yeah, so I've been, working on that as well.
That sounds so cool. You will have to send me the information when your book is out so I can push it out to everyone.
Thank you. I will do. Thank you.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And I wanted to ask you also about the Wired for Learning method that you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I came up with that name, actually, because Questa Therapies, that's my clinic and everything, but I thought, well, it doesn't really tell people what it does because I treat adults and children, and I needed to be able to separate the children from the adults a bit more. So the Wired for Learning is about supporting the children with the reflexes, the auditory and all that sort of area. Showing that because I have a program that I work with these children. So that's a Wired for Learning program. And I've also, I've got an online program for it as well. So if some of you can't come to the clinic, say in a different country, they've got all the exercises, how to do them there as well. Because not everybody can come to Berkshire.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us how our listeners can get in touch with you and find out more.
My email is info@Questa therapies.com. And they can request a free consultation. If they go to my website, questatherapies.com, there's a link there. They can just go and they can book in a free consultation. And it's over the phone. And from that, I can just say, I can tell them whether I feel they should need to come in or not, or advice. Because sometimes very young children, some parents with very young children who I don't treat, 3-4 years old, things like that. But I can give them advice and maybe some odd things that they can do just in the meantime as well.
Well, thanks so much. I love it when people are working with, you know, these populations that are so inconvenient for our systems who really need help, like these children. So I really applaud your work there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And
very much.
Definitely keep us informed when your book comes out, because I love stories, especially stories where there's a good, happy ending and somebody, that's great. Okay, thanks.
Okay, take care then. And thanks very much.
Yeah.